You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is...
Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I am super excited to have one of my favorite writers back on the show. It's T. Jefferson Parker, and he's got a fantastic new book. It's the fourth book in the Roland Ford series, and it's called Then She Vanished. Jeff, I love this book. I'm a big fan of everything that you do. Welcome back to the show today.
Well, it's nice to be here, Hank. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you're so welcome. The cover to this book is outstanding. Did you model for Roland Ford on the front of this book?
Oh, it's funny you should ask. No, I didn't model, but when I saw the cover myself for the first time, I thought, well, it kind of looks like me.
It does. You know, if you kind of look at it from the, you know, with a out of the corner of your eye, and I'm like, well, yeah, that's Jeff on the front of that book.
It's at first glance, it looks similar. It's kind of funny.
It does. It's so funny. So this is the fourth Roland Ford book. Do you feel like that you're getting to know Roland by this point?
Yeah, you know, I do. And Roland's changed a lot from the beginning until now. Fourth book, like you said, you know, in the very first book, he's heartbroken. He's almost despondent. He even considers killing himself at the end of that book and decides not to. And now we find Roland, you know, three books later, fourth book, in a much more solid on more solid ground. You know, he's not despondent anymore. He's managed to put the grief away over his lost wife. You know, he's been widowed for 5 years now, and he, as he observes on the first page of the book, you know, we don't heal stronger in the broken places, but we do heal. And so that's kind of where Roland's at now. He has healed from that wound as much as he ever will, and he is his heart is alive for the next love in his life, you know. And if he didn't work so hard and get thrown into all these dark cases, maybe he'd have time to, you know, to date someone.
You know, when we talked last year, when The Last Good Guy was out, I think that was your 20th book. Is that right?
Let's see. The Last Good Guy was like my 25th book.
25th. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, close.
So, well, yeah, close. I knew it was a big number. But when you're, you know, kind of when you're this far into your career, and now you've got this, I don't want to say new series because we're at book four. You know, when you've got this much behind you, and then you're dealing with new characters, and, you know, a lot of times in a series, it may be, you know, four, five, six books in before the author really gets comfortable in that protagonist skin. Is it still exciting for you 26 books, you know, later that the creative process is still new? And how do you approach new writing nowadays?
Yeah, you know, writing is funny. You get a lot of energy, and I get a lot of energy from the words that I put down on a page. So it may be some months that go by before I'm able to begin a book, because I have to think about it a lot, and I make notes and outlines and whatever it might be. But when it comes time to write, you know, I feel in my heart it's time to begin, and I can write that first sentence. I get this adrenaline, and this kind of thrill goes through me, and I feel like I'm on top of my game, and I'm really doing in life what I'm best at, and that is to write. And so when I'm working on something, I derive energy from that. And so each book, because novels are so darn complicated and long and operate on so many different levels. They're real brain teasers to write. You know, it's difficult to write a novel. And so, you know, I get caught up in the excitement of creation. And I also get, you know, just mystified by how difficult it is sometimes. And it's this incredible puzzle that you have to figure out. So between those two things, writing stays very fresh for me. I mean, basically, I just kind of like my job.
I love it. One question that I love to ask people is kind of where that first kernel or germ of a story comes from, and how it grows then into a fully formed idea with plots and subplots and all of that. But what about when you're dealing with a new book, when in that very first stage, is it different for the beginning of a book in a series as opposed to writing a standalone book where every idea is fresh and new and, you know, the possibilities are limitless? The benefit of writing a series is kind of a lot of the world building, if you will, is done. People can step into that and they're familiar with the world and the character, at least some of the characters already, and they kind of know the tone and the feel and how this is going to go. When you're writing a standalone, all bets are off. It's brand new. Is the creative process different for you when you're writing a new book in a series as opposed to a new standalone book?
Yeah. Well stated. Those words that you just said are really accurate and really good. It's a huge difference for the reasons that you just enunciated. Your world building, if you will, when you're writing a series and you know you're writing a series, is after that first book, it's kind of done for you, you know, so you can step in and your reader can step in on into that familiar territory that you mentioned. Writing the first draft of a standalone book that is not a part of a series, and you have to create that world anew and fresh, and there are, you know, quote unquote, unlimited possibilities. Well, you're right. There really are unlimited possibilities. So your canvas is huge when you're doing that, as opposed to when you're writing a series story. A lot of that work is done for you. So it's two very different approaches. And, you know, some authors are more comfortable in one than the other. And many readers have a preference. You know, some readers really prefer a series, and some readers really prefer standalones, you know. So as an author, as a reader, I don't really care. I like them both. But as an author, I do both, and I enjoy both ways of writing. I think the more difficult way to write is the series. I think it's much harder to sustain a series than it is to write the same number of standalones because of the reasons that you just gave. You're just so free as a writer when you're writing a standalone novel.
It's also harder, though, because you have no idea where it's going to go. And, the one thing about a standalone is the stakes can be higher. No one is safe in a standalone because, people haven't built a relationship with it. Well, if this is Roland Ford book four, they're probably, if it keeps going the way these are, there probably will be a Roland Ford book five. We know in the beginning that Roland's not going to die. But are there things that you can do to the characters that ramp up that same kind of tension and leave readers vulnerable, if you will? Reading a character that we know is not going to die, but something awful we know will happen to him.
Yeah. Thus all the, you know, the terrible beatings and things that we always put our heroes through, you know, in order to garner some sort of sympathy for them. Good observations. You know, there's no replacing in my mind, the suspense and the mystery and the sense of danger that you can generate in a standalone novel. They're better for that, you know? And that's one of the reasons that I've written so many standalones. I want the reader to seriously wonder at the beginning of my standalone books, whether, you know, who's going to be left standing at the end of this book. And I want my protagonists, health, wealth, and life itself to be in question. And I want it to be, I want those things to be challenged, because that's the greatest suspense of all, is this guy going to make it, you know? And at the in a serious novel, you always know he's going to make it. And there's no way to beat that poor guy up enough to gain the kind of mystery and the kind of just nail biting suspense that you feel for a character who you think might not be standing at the end of the book.
Well, you know, we know authors like George R.R. Martin, for instance, who will kill a character in a heartbeat. No mm-hmm. one is safe in any mm-hmm. of his books ever. But are there things that you can do to a character, say a series character like Roland Ford, that are worse than death?
Well, gosh, I don't know. I suppose, you know, I'm going to try to keep Roland in danger. I try to keep Roland in danger as much as I can. You know, I want his physical well-being to be threatened, you know. Mentally, psychically, you know, what can I do to him to get him as close as I can to being ruined as a man? Well, that's a possibility. I may try that. I mean, Roland so far has been fairly lucky in these books. He has not been taken to the very brink of existence yet.
Yeah.
Want to grow as a writer and take your writing to the next level? Give Pro Writing Aid a try. Pro Writing Aid is a grammar checker, style editor, and writing mentor in one package. Pro Writing Aid will never replace a human editor. Rather, it helps you self-edit to a deeper level so that when you send it off to an editor, they will be able to focus on the meat of your writing and not spend their time fixing basic writing issues. Pro Writing Aid is the only platform that offers world-class grammar and style checking, combined with more in-depth reports to help you strengthen your writing. Our unique combination of suggestions, articles, videos, and quizzes makes writing fun and interactive. Writing can be grammatically perfect, but still feel awkward and clumsy. Pro Writing Aid searches out elements like repetitiveness, vague wording, sentence length variation, over-dependence on adverbs, passive voice, over-complicated sentence structures, and so much more. Nothing makes a writer lose credibility faster than spelling and grammar mistakes. Submit clean, error-free writing. Go to ProWritingAid.com and use code HANK20 for 20% off of Pro Writing Aid Premium. Pro Writing Aid. Check it out today.
When there are some things in this book, some plot points, some of the world that's going on, that it in the book, it's an election year, or mm-hmm. we're dealing with politicians and politics. In real life, this is an election year, and you had to know that this book would come out a few months before a major election. We didn't even know about coronavirus then, so we'll kind of take that off the table. Mm-hmm. But real life issues like an election, and this book deals with politicians. How much of the real world do you like to put into your books, or real world issues, or things that that readers might be dealing with? How important is it to cut close to the bone of reality, if you will, and how much is just, this is just reading. It doesn't have to equate to anything. How close do you get to real life events, and how comfortable are you with that?
Well, I'm very comfortable with that. And I think that real life events are what we all should be writing about. Mostly, I think that the books that I write are the opposite of escapist entertainment. I definitely hope they're entertainment. I intend them to be entertaining, and I see myself as an entertainer. But it's not escape. It's escaping what's real. It's interpreting and showing what's real, and using what's real to make the story good. I've always felt, and I think it comes from my days as a reporter, that you know, I write a book with the idea that if for some reason, you know, 30 years from now or 50 years from now, somebody reads that book, they're going to get a fair, honest representation, slice of life as we're all living it in the times that we're living. You know, I want to write about now. I want to use now. And I would very self-consciously, you know, wrote about politics in this book because I knew that my readers would be, you know, picking up this book and reading it in the heat of the 2020 election year, which may or may not be, you know, one of the most important elections this country's ever had. So I believe in the here and now, and I believe in the world around us, and I don't want to escape it. I want to dramatize it.
That's a really interesting thing that you bring up, because sometimes I pick up a book and I just really want to not deal with the reality of the world around, and I want to escape, for lack of a better term. But sometimes I want to challenge myself to think about things differently. And sometimes, you know, a good book might change my beliefs on something. Sometimes it just challenges me to look at things from a different perspective and to see a situation through a character's point of view or through their eyes. Isn't that the great benefit of a good book and literature, is that we get to see the world a little differently than we do on a day-to-day basis? And how seriously do you take that charge?
Yeah, I think what you say is true. I think that a world created well by an author is going to present differently to each reader a different picture of reality than that reader has. And so, you know, if someone steps into the world of Roland Ford and Then She Vanished and reads the book and finishes, you know, he or she is going to have, you know, a slightly different view of things based on that story and what happened in it. And that's why I do think that it's important for authors to include the here and the now and the what's going on around us. And I say that not only as an author, but as a reader. You know, when I'm reading a book, I love to know where I am geographically, certainly in time. You know, is this 50 years ago? Is it now? Is it 50 years in the future? Where are we? What are we doing? And when I enter that world, wherever it may be, it can be a small town, it can be New York City, it can be wherever, and that world is drawn convincingly, then I get a different view of my life and the world through that fiction.
When you mentioned earlier that Roland Ford had been through some stuff, and he, you know, not being our typical protagonist, he's wrestling with things, and he's got personal issues that are tantamount to him. And where do we find Roland Ford in the beginning of this book, and who is Dalton Strait?
You know, Roland Ford at the beginning of this book, his fourth adventure, is in pretty good shape. You know, he's coming off a bad physical beating a year ago. He gets out, he gets beat up by some supremacists out in the desert and left very badly, you know, beaten. But other than that, he's okay. You know, his psyche is strong. He's recovering from the loss of his wife. He's spry. He's doing just fine. What happens though, of course, is, you know, opening scene, classic sort of PI opening, you know, he's approached in his office by a man that he immediately recognizes. His name is Dalton Strait, and he's the California assemblyman in Roland's district. So he knows this guy through politics. And it also turns out that they served together in Fallujah, in Iraq, during the Battle of Fallujah some years ago. So in walks this politician, this assemblyman, who hires Roland to find the assemblyman's missing wife, who is his wife, the mother of his children, his love, and his campaign manager. And thus begins that book. So Roland starts well and strong and ready to go in this book. And of course, because it's a thriller and it's a PI story, he gets himself in basically over his head really pretty quickly. And everything that is strong and good in Roland is soon tested.
Dalton Strait's wife is missing, and he comes to Roland for help and to get to the bottom of this. Why did Dalton Strait choose to go to Roland as opposed to the police?
Well, you know, he's gone to the police. Natalie, his wife, has been gone for just about 24 hours. The police are a little bit reluctant to act boldly at this point. They want to wait another day or two to see if she shows up, because statistically, you know, the runaway, you know, spouse will, you know, return, you know, soon. And so the police are dragging their feet a little bit about it. And Dalton is extremely worried about her. And he doesn't know what she has done or what has befallen her, if she's run away voluntarily or if she's, you know, perhaps, you know, victim of foul play. And Roland takes this kind of assignment very seriously. He's a great person finder. He knows how to work the system and he knows how to find people. And so he takes Natalie's missingness very seriously, and he launches himself into his job. And the reason Dalton hires him is because Dalton knows of Roland's reputation. They served together in the Marines, and he's calling on Roland because Roland is good at what he does, and Dalton Strait knows that.
I didn't mean to bump the mic. There's another group that factors heavily into this book, the Chaos Committee. What was the impetus behind the Chaos Committee, and are they based on any group that you know, or what was the what's the motivation behind them that brings them on the scene?
I'll tell you that the Chaos Committee in the book is apparently a group claiming responsibility for the mailing of letter bombs to San Diego area politicians. And the genesis of what I call the Chaos Committee was a couple of years ago in Florida. That unfortunate man living out of his van who was doing just that. He was mailing letter bombs to left-leaning politicians and celebrities, and he did some damage. And during the 2 weeks or so that he was mailing those bombs, to people, real people with real fingers and real lives, I was really captured by that. I thought it was just truly horrible, and I thought that you know where is our country right now? You know, when we come to the point where you can't, you think about going to the mailbox to pull out your mail. There's a little envelope there that's kind of you know, fat maybe, and you open it and it blows your fingers off. That really got to me. And it was a real thing. You can Google it and find out about that little reign of terror that this man, you know, engendered. And that, to me, simply morphed in my imagination into, you know, what if this was, you know, more than one person? And what if he, they, she were organized and more serious than this guy living out of his van? I mean, you could really do that. You could mail letter bombs to people and do a lot of damage and cause a lot of terror. So anyway, the beginning of the Chaos Committee was that unfortunate soul in Florida 2 years ago. I forget his name.
Noveler is the best way to write a novel. Why? Quite simply because we've made it the easiest place to do it. Writing a novel is hard enough. Noveler takes care of all the logistical bits of writing a novel, just leaving that small matter of the words to you. It's a clean, beautiful writing interface with writing analytics, goals and streaks, advanced grammar checking, version control, day, evening, and night modes, and many other features designed to take all the stress out of writing. Tell us what you need and we'll build it. Together, we'll build a better tool. With a design-led approach, all the right tools that you need, Noveler saves all your words constantly, allows you to manage and order your novel easily. It's accessible from any device, desktop or mobile. It syncs to Google Drive and Dropbox. It allows exports in various formats, including ebook and more. It also has nice touches like allowing you to write both offline and online, unique for a web-based platform. Everyone needs help with their writing, from inspiration through to grammar checking, so we're doing our best to provide that support. We integrate that support directly into Noveler. Our advanced grammar checker powered by Pro Writing Aid does everything from spell check to style advice. Our writing courses include the incredible Tim Clare's Couch to ADK. We're really excited to offer all Author Stories listeners 30% off Noveler for a whole year. And it doesn't matter if you choose to sign up for the monthly or annual plan. You'll get 30% off. All you need to do is use the discount code Hank when you sign up. Noveler, N-O-V-L-R. That's Noveler.org.
Well, Jeff, when you started writing this book, I can guess probably a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know the state of the world that would be 2020. Not only with COVID, but then we had the murder of George Floyd and a lot of protests that came after that. Some of those protests turned into riots, and we have a lot of situations where there are peaceful protests that begin that way, and then bad actors come in, infiltrate those things, and then turn it into something it was never meant to be. And we can see places where that's happened all over the place. When you're dealing with a group like the Chaos Committee, do you look at the world through their eyes, to a point when writing the book, do you see how people could get twisted, in their worldview, like this?
Yeah, I do. And I don't think it takes any real talent or insight at all to see what makes people angry. The anger is in the air all around us, as Roland notes on the first page of this book, and our reactions to it, to that anger, are everywhere you look. The news, the newspapers, you know, television, social media, everyone, it's out there. It's very, the volatility is easy to see. So for me to sit back as a writer and try to inhabit that anger and try to feel that anger is not difficult at all. I can see it anytime I want. And for me to morph that guy in the van in Florida sending these letter bombs out to people into the Chaos Committee, which is just a larger sort of an organized version of that same sense of hate and despondency and anger that the guy in the van had, is easy. It's easy to harness that. And I think that these times that we live in, just the last few years, are exceptionally divided, exceptionally angry, and there's a lot of just free-floating hatred in the air. And Roland notes that on the very first page of the book. So, you know, this is a book, I think this is very much a book that will reflect our moment here. And again, if I'm lucky enough to have somebody 30 years from now reading this book, I think he or she will have a feel for the times that we're in right now, and I think that's important.
With the disappearance of Natalie Strait and Dalton Strait's wife, as Roland starts to dig in and pursue this case, there are layers of that relationship between Dalton and Natalie that come to light, and their marriage is not perfect, like a politician would want the world to think. What about that situation? We've got this public face of a politician, and then his private face that may or may not be what is portrayed. What was your thinking behind that character and the complexities of the public face versus the private face?
You know, that's a good question, and I think, just speaking personally, there are a few things in life that are more interesting than the public face versus the private face, and especially in the world of politics or celebrity, where a truly public figure has a role to play and has created this role and that we all know is not the real person. It can't be, you know. So what is the real person and what's going on in their life? I mean, that to me is very, very, very interesting. And in the book, Dalton Strait is a California assemblyman. He has some power. He's up for his third term. It's going to be a close race. And he's running his campaign a little. He's kind of winging it. And Dalton's treatment of money and using campaign money for possibly not campaign ends is something that we read about politicians doing all the time. And so Dalton is kind of a composite sketch of the. It's easy to say corrupt, and that's the handy word. He's the poster boy for a corrupt politician, and I've drawn him from various politicians over the decades who have done some of the things that
you've Dalton had plenty of examples. examples to pull from.
Again, yeah, there's no lack of material there. Yeah.
So we've got this story of a missing woman and her husband who is desperate to find her and everything that entails. And then we've got this other storyline with the Chaos Committee and the mail bombers, which is, would seem like two very disparate things. But as you always do, they are deftly woven together. At what point in the writing did you realize that there was going to be an intimate connection between these things?
Hank, I knew there had to be. Because to make a novel, I think, whole whole, there has to be, that connection has to be there. The question for me always from the beginning was how? How am I going to get there? How am I going to get that splice done, invisibly, but solidly enough that when it is pulled at the end of the book, it holds,
Right.
That solder, how are you going to get that? And so the writing of the book, it's how you figure it out as you write it. And when you come to the end, you write that ending and you think you've got it all right. And you read through it and you go, nope, that's not it. And then you literally lean on the delete button until that stuff is gone. And then you write another way. That's what rewriting is. And so you work it out during the course of the book. And I knew from the very beginning that, that Natalie and the Chaos Committee will have to be intimately linked somehow. But I didn't know how.
And I'm going to leave that to the readers to figure out that connection, because it's absolutely amazing. The new book, Then She Vanished, is out everywhere now in hardcover, audiobook, and Kindle edition. There are links to it in the show notes. Jeff, I've been asking authors lately about their experience with COVID and how this is affecting their creative process, because writers tend to spend a lot of time alone, and a lot of us work from home, and there's a room in our house or an office that we spend a lot of time with, either a computer or a notebook, and mm-hmm. we do our thing. So you would think that a COVID lockdown wouldn't necessarily have a lot of effect on writers, but there's some things going on, and how has this time affected you? And the book that we've got now, Then She Vanished, was probably done or mostly done when all this happened, wasn't it?
It was done well before COVID became a reality, Hank. Yeah, it was done by then. To answer your larger question, I felt paralyzed after 9/11 as an author, and I felt obligated to write about it, and I didn't for quite some time. I feel similarly paralyzed by COVID. I feel obligated to write about it. I mean, it's huge. It's the history of mankind, playing out before our very eyes. And yet I don't feel equipped right now, to deal with, COVID, just like I didn't feel equipped to deal with 9/11. Interestingly, when the lockdown began, back in March, I started a new novel. And the novel is set in 1968 and takes place in Laguna Beach, California, and it has nothing to do with COVID. It can't. And so my blessing in choosing that time to write about for my next novel, removed for me the conundrum of having COVID out there and having to deal with it in a book. On the reality front, COVID has kept me even more at home and in my office than I usually am. I'm fortunate to work in one of those, you know, home offices that like you're talking about. And so I just have, you know, I spend more time out here. And not coincidentally, that book that I started back in March, I'm just flying through it. You know, the pages are ripping out of the printer every day, and it's good stuff. So that's the way I'm dealing with COVID. And one of these days, very soon, COVID will be in my books, and I don't know what I'm going to say about it yet. I don't have to worry about that right now. I just have to keep from getting it. getting it.
Absolutely. And we hope that you and everyone around you is safe and staying that way. I'm really interested to see what starts coming out, you know, next year as mm-hmm. as people, you know, start to kind of put some of these thoughts on paper. And I'm equally interested, like you said, the a book that has nothing to do with COVID, because I think we'll need a little of that escape, as well as some of, you know, people kind of putting their thoughts on paper and walking through that with us. It's going to be an interesting time, that's for sure.
I'm really curious too, Hank, to see what the writers are going to come up with.
Yeah. Then She Vanished, Roland Ford Book 4 is out everywhere now. Like we said, in Kindle edition, audiobook, hardcover, however you like books, you can grab it. I love an audiobook. They allow me to do all the show prep that I do. And, you know, when I know that there's a new T. Jefferson Parker audiobook, I'm excited. And I can't wait to dig into this audiobook. I've read the ARC. And now I want to read it for enjoyment, and audiobooks is how I do that.
Oh, that's interesting. That's good. Good to hear.
Absolutely. Jeff, tell people where they can find you online if they want to dig into all the great stuff that you do.
TJeffersonParker.com, you know, is a website, and there's tons of information on that thing. There's all sorts of links to reviews and newsletters and, you know, calendar, schedule, whatever, synopses of the books, different editions that are available. That's as good a place as any, you know, and I'm lucky I have good publishers, and they get those books out there, you know, physical books and electronic books out there wherever books are sold. So I'm easy to find and easy to research, and I hope you guys like the new book.
Absolutely. We're going to send everyone to pick up their copy of Then She Vanished. And we'll put links to your website in there so people can easily find you as well. Jeff, this has been so much fun catching up. Thank you for taking time to come back on the show.
Thank you, Hank. Anytime.
Scribophile is a respectful online writing workshop and writer's community. Writers of all skill levels join to improve each other's work with thoughtful critiques and by sharing their writing experiences. We're the writing group to join if you want to find beta readers, get the best feedback around, learn how to get published, and be a part of the friendliest and most successful writing workshop online. Improve your writing by receiving detailed critiques. Learn from a vast collection of free writing resources. Make lifelong friends in our busy community of writers. Writing is a solitary art, but that doesn't mean you have to be lonely. Lucky for you, there are thousands of writers on Scribophile every day, and we're a really friendly bunch. You've never seen a writing group like this one. Join Scribophile today at scribophile.community.